Our podcast will begin in just a moment. Production and distribution made possible each day by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. Steve sets aside some time each month to review retirement portfolios for our podcast listeners. He does this via Skype or telephone. His schedule is limited to just a few, but if you'd like to schedule your review, the next date coming up is July 20th. And if that works for you, just go to investtalk.com and click on the Invest Talk tab. And now, today's Invest Talk.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Invest Talk. I hope everyone had a fun-filled 4th of July weekend. And this is our Tuesday, July 5th edition of Invest Talk. And our goal here each and every weekday is to help you rise above the ranks of the average investor. And we hope that you tune in, and not just with your ears, but with your voice, with your questions as well. All right. And today we're going to start off with a quote from master investor Warren Buffett. And he says, games are won by players who focus on the playing field, not by those whose eyes are glued to the scoreboard. Another way of saying is, keep your eye on the ball. Be careful about the details. Observe the time-tested rules that work. And that's what we are here to do each and every weekday, is impart those time-tested rules on you so that you can apply them and be successful. One of my favorite quotes is, winners focus on winning, losers focus on winners. So many people, they focus, especially in today's culture of everyone loving star athletes and actors and, you know, people in Hollywood and celebrities. That's not helping your goals along, right? And when you're investing, it's the same thing. So just focusing on what other people are doing isn't going to help you much. What you have to focus is on how do time-tested rules help you make better decisions and ultimately have better outcomes. Now, with market volatility whipping investors' emotions every which way, it's increasingly important to refocus on the fundamentals of companies you own and are watching. And I've talked about this a while for the past 6 to 9 months or so, about how things are changing from growth investing, the exciting names in the marketplace that you hear about maybe on CNBC, IPOs and things like that, to value names, fundamentals. What are earnings, cash flows, revenues? And cheap companies are starting to come back in favor. So you got to concentrate on companies with strong businesses, strong balance sheets, and reasonable valuations. If not, you're going to get hurt. And not to say that value stocks can't go down, it's just they're going to outperform going forward for the next, I think, 5 to 7 years, maybe 9 years. Now, in beginning your research first, you have to understand the company business model. How they make money, what factors can affect its earnings. Are they a global company with sales and operations abroad and all over the world, or are they just domestically focused, deriving most, if not all, of their revenue from here in the U.S.? And that's where you just start. Then you focus on another direction. What does their balance sheet look like? What's their industry? What are the industry dynamics? What are their competitors doing? If they're a global firm, you have to understand their revenue breakdown of each region of the world and assess the growth prospects within each one. Then the dollar is going to affect it. So if it's a global company, how do you think the dollar is going to move? If the dollar gets stronger against the currencies where they do business, the company you're looking at does business, well, that's going to be an issue. Because the amount of money that they're getting, they're still getting those foreign currencies, but when you translate it back in the dollars, it's less money now. And vice versa. When the dollar weakens and the other country's currencies are going up in value, well, when you translate it back into dollars, it's worth more. So is that going to be a headwind or a tailwind? So it's important to understand those dynamics and industry dynamics as well. Do they have a defined strategy? Are they reinvesting in their business effectively? What type of margins do they have? Now, a company with a strong and steadily repeatable business model is one you want to own. And when I say steadily repeatable, I mean competitors aren't going to come in and steal their lunch, most of their lunch, in a short period of time. I mean, they're not going to be out-competed. They're going to have a steady business no matter what. Their market share is fairly steady. Then you want to own them at the right price. Where do you buy them? Well, this is where you turn to technical analysis. You find areas of chart support. You look at relative strength compared to the market. Relative strength compared to others within their industry. And buying the leaders within an industry is the best way to outperform. Now, you never want to chase a stock that has run up too quickly and has stretched valuations. But you like to see some outperformance. Now, do you have a question about these investing principles? Maybe other investing principles, whatever it is. I'm here for any money questions. We have about 45 minutes left in the show, but that time goes by quickly. So ultimately, I want to get you to call in sooner rather than later with your question so we don't run out of time and have to squeeze you in at the end. So let's check in now to our 24-hour listener line. 888-99-CHART is our anytime number.
Hi, Steve and Justin. I'm one of your listeners, and I like your program a lot, and I've been listening for the recordings, not only for this year, but the ones which you have from 2008 and 2009 to reflect upon how was the situation back then, and as I was too young and didn't trade or invest back then. In the program in 2009, you talked about PE ratios, just like you do today, and how one has to catch up with the other. Either it's the E to the P or the P to the E to stabilize and to achieve the median. So I have a question. How does this work out now in today's world and to today's situation of the market, and also in relation to the correction you're predicting for the summer? Because there was a drawdown for 10% due to Brexit. So I wonder, is this related? Has your correction already been made with this Brexit panic? Or do you expect some more drawdown this summer or this year for the markets? And how is this related to the PE of the total industry and indexes? I'll be listening on the podcast. Have a good day and wish you well. Thank you.
All right, a couple of great questions. Well, I do still think we'll have a pullback in the summer, a correction this summer. And the Brexit thing was a vibration. And we really weren't back near where we were the day before the Brexit vote, pretty much. Which would be, what was that, two Thursdays ago? Or no, yeah, something like that. And actually, I'll tell you the date right now. It would be June 22nd. Yeah, so we're pretty much at where we were on June 22nd, and the Brexit vote was, I believe, the next day. And so it's had some gyrations, but you know, it's nothing like we saw from November to mid-February, right? And I think we're going to have something similar to that, maybe even worse. I'm not sure. And it could be fallout from Brexit. It could be just a global economy slowing down. In general. So there's a lot of potential reasons why we're going to have a summer correction, but I still think it's there, and technically it looks like we're pretty close to that as well. So I am expecting a much further decline than we saw just right after the Brexit vote. Now, when you're talking about P ratios, you know, back in 2009, P ratios were high, even though the market was low because earnings fell so much. Well, earnings turned around And you know, the economy got a little bit better. Money was printed by the Federal Reserve. A lot of companies started buying back stock. That helped earnings per share. And so you had earnings catch up to And now you're seeing earnings very high on an earnings per share basis, but prices are also very high. So how do you correct that? Prices are overvalued from many different metrics, but including PE. Well, you either have prices go down while earnings stay the same, or earnings could go down and prices go down much, much more than on average. So that's how that imbalance kind of can fix itself in today's market. Now, if you have confidence in your analysis of a company, you should be overjoyed to see a price drop and be ready to set up and buy as others sell. Got a question about buying and selling strategies? Give me a call. Our anytime number for instant answers is 888-99-CHART. I hope to hear from you. Let's go to Bruce in Fresno. How you doing, Bruce?
Good.
What can I do for you?
Yes, I'm wondering about Dana Holdings and if it's a value type stock.
You know, this has certainly declined a lot, so it's much cheaper than it was back in middle 2014 when it was in the mid 20s, and now it's at $10 a share. It's pretty much been in a downtrend ever since. But I don't see a great value yet here. You know, the it has positive cash flow still, but that is declining. Return on equity is about 16%, but that's also declining. That worries me. And for everyone out there, Dana Holdings, they're a OEM manufacturer for auto companies, right? They provide technology, driveline, sealing, and thermal management products for vehicle manufacturers. Is it cheap? It's not expensive. You know, it's declined a lot. What worries me is the debt. They have a decent amount of debt in their balance sheet. It is still it's still positive cash flow, but if that turns a negative like it did back in 2008, that could be a big problem. And this company almost went bankrupt in 2008. So I'm not a fan of it, especially if you look at car sales. Car sales are still doing well. Dana Holdings should be at near the highs, right? But they're not. And so that worries me, the fact that they have a lot of debt on their balance sheet. I'm just not a fan of it, to be honest with you, Bruce.
Okay, right. Great. Thanks a lot.
No problem. That was Dana Holdings. Let's go to Daniel in Palo Alto. How you doing, Daniel?
Hey, Justin, happy holiday week.
Thank you.
I just had a quick question, kind of a two-part question. One, I was thinking about shorting banks, given the climate, J.P. Morgan in particular, and wanted to, I know that I wanted to ask you simultaneously about whether you thought there was going to be a QE4 come in. I know there's one.
I think the Fed will try something else before QE4, whether it's negative rates or, I don't know, another operation twist type of thing. I'm not sure if that'll happen, but I don't rule it out. That's for sure. And you want to short JP Morgan? I don't mind that. I think that's a pretty good short. I think the best shorts are in Europe, you know, Credit Suisse, Deutsche Bank. I think there's definitely going to be
still
a big blow up there, soon.
Wow. Even still, even with the drop they've already taken. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, just the negative rates are impossible for those banks to really survive and thrive. And that's why they're
gotcha.
In such dire positions. And I think it's only going to get worse.
Excellent. Okay. Thank you, Justin.
No
Appreciate
problem.
It.
No problem. You're listening to Invest Talk. How do interest rates affect the stock market? How can I make my portfolio more defensive without running from the market? What questions do you have on your mind? I want to hear from you. Our direct line is 888-99-CHART. All right, let's get to our talking points for today. We have a few. Our main one is about choosing between mutual funds and ETFs. These are very popular products that a lot of investors are using nowadays. And I'm going to talk about the pros and cons of each one and what type of investor should use mutual funds and which ones should probably use ETFs. And then I also want to talk about financial contagion. That's one of the topics that I was just going over right now. Systematic risk is what I want to talk about. Systematic risk and ways to prevent them. What is systematic risk? Do you know what that is? Do you know what the types of systematic risks there are? Well, I just gave you one, but we're going to get to that. I also want to talk about Brexit. Well, who were the winners to emerge from the Brexit vote? Who's happy about it? And then I want to talk about, if we have time, tax breaks of owning your own home. Sometimes they can be overvalued. And when is that? So I'm going to talk about that. But ultimately, I want to hear from you. I want to know what's on your mind. 888-99-CHART is our number. 888-992-4278. That's how you get through to ask your question on today's show. Now, the Dow today was down 108 points. The S&P was down 14.5 points. And NASDAQ was down almost 40 points. So certainly a negative day on the markets broadly, you know, not terribly negative, but certainly a solidly negative red day after a snapback rally after the Brexit sell-off. And that's typical. To me, you know, it was a short covering rally, and now we're back into the same type of chart pattern that we had before. And that is still a topping pattern for the overall market, still a broad rolling top is what I would call it. And that's why I'm still expecting a decline in the market coming up here in the next couple months or so. And I actually think if I were to bet on the month, I would say it'd probably be this month for various reasons that I have to get into later. But that would be my bet. Now, we have the jobs number coming out Friday. That's going to be very interesting after a weak jobs number last month. Is it going to rebound now? You have the ADP jobs number coming out tomorrow, so that'll be a little bit of a little preview of what we're going to see on Friday. And how will that affect what the Fed's going to do? The market rebounded from the Brexit vote, and that's really what the Fed cares about the most, is what's the market doing? Market holding up? Well, that's giving them a little bit more room to potentially hike rates. They don't want to cause a market correction, crash, whatever it is. And so they're very mindful of that. And if the jobs number is good, that might put a rate hike back on the table for the end of the year. I don't think they're going to raise this month. I think it's almost impossible for them to do it at their next meeting. But I think they still want to try to do it by the end of the year, but I'd say they probably won't. So that's really the market today. Let's get back to a Q&A question from our 24-hour listener line. 888-99-CHART is our anytime number.
Hi, Steve. Justin, this is Vincent from Texas. I had a question about what the difference is between top and bottom line growth. The company I work for, PepsiCo, will be reporting earnings this Thursday, the 7th. Which is before the official start of earnings season. And I wanted to have an understanding that I think their estimate is $1.32. And if they beat by a penny and came in at $1.33, what does that actually mean? And what would that tell an investor who is looking at the company and thinking about investing in the company? Thanks, and I look forward to your response on the radio. Thanks.
All right, that's a good question. Top line simply means revenue. When someone says top line on a report, earnings report, they're talking about revenue. Bottom line is earnings. So if they beat on the top and they miss on the bottom, it means they beat on revenues and they missed on earnings. And, you know, it could be vice versa. They could beat on both top and bottom line. And if a company beats earnings estimates, you say by a penny, well, it's just showing that the average, that's actually pretty good for the analyst because the analyst got it pretty close to right. You know, a penny off is not big. So when the when you're talking about what the market's expecting, it's what the average analyst is expecting them to earn. Now, if they beat, well, that's nice, but investors look forward. They don't look backwards. So that one penny beat is probably not going to tell them a whole lot. What they care more about is what are they going to guide to next quarter or next year? Is that higher than what the street's expecting, or is that lower than what the street is expecting? That's more important than what they just did over the past quarter, because those expectations have been adjusted and the street kind of knows what they're going to earn. Okay? So that's kind of the difference, how you kind of decipher earnings reports. Now, we're glad you're with us today for Invest Talk. Now, if you're an Invest Talk insider, you have access to a short list of ETFs that hold a broad mix of dividend paying stocks or other equities that pay steady dividends. And you can sign up for free if you are not an Invest Talk insider on investtalk.com. Now, coming up next, we'll take your call at 888-99-CHART.
We thank you for subscribing to our podcast. Distribution made possible by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. Did you know you can access a link to a related article associated with each day's main talking point? Also, you can click back to listings for the last 5 Invest Talk podcasts, each listing the topics and stocks discussed. It's right there on investtalk.com.
Let's go to George in San Jose. How are you doing, George?
Good afternoon, Justin. Thanks for taking my call.
No problem.
Your opinion about the entry point for Google, and I listen from radio.
Okay. He's looking at Google. I think it goes without explaining what Google is.
And who Google is?
He's looking for an entry point. Well, this is why sometimes I don't like it when callers say, well, I'll take the answer off the air, because I would like to ask him, is he looking long-term, short-term? So I'll give him both. My short-term support would be 650. Right now it's at 694. If I was going to say long-term, what's my long-term buy point, I'm going to go with 467. 467. So short term, what did I say it was? 650, right? Yeah, 650 or so. And long term, I would definitely like to pick it up from the mid 400s. That would make me more comfortable from a long term hold perspective. Now let's talk a little bit about the difference between ETFs and mutual funds. And a lot of investors who want instant diversification and they don't want to own specific companies, don't want to do that research, right, of understanding an industry, understanding the dynamics of a balance sheet, understanding pricing power, and all those deep in the weeds type of topics for individual companies. A lot of people just like to buy individual mutual funds and ETFs, and that gives you that broad diversification right away. But which ones are better? Well, first let's talk about mutual funds, the positives. I'm going to give you the positives for both. Mutual funds are readily available. They are available in your 401k, most likely, your brokerage account. They're all over the place. There's so many different options. There's, I think, 18,000 different mutual funds. It's crazy. All different types of strategies, so a lot of flexibility. That's a good thing. Number two, they're less frequently traded. They only trade usually once per day. Some mutual funds might close. They have a morning close sometimes, but that's pretty rare. It's usually just at the end of the day. So it's better for more buy and hold type of long-term investors. And they're less subject to maybe market manipulation, trading inefficiencies, etc. Tax benefits. And this is really only after a recession. So there's something called capital gains distributions, and something you should always know if you're investing in mutual funds in a taxable account. Well, during good times, they'll make money on stocks and they might have to sell them over time. They might want to do it. They might have to do it for redemptions, and selling it creates capital gains. And you don't, if you're a holder of that mutual fund, those capital gains don't hit you right away. They'll take a distribution. Now, when things are going well, they'll take gains. Well, when things are not going so well in the market, they will take losses. And that's actually can be a good thing if you're buying after a recession. They might have negative capital gains exposure, meaning all the gains of, say they have 10% negative capital gains exposure, well, they could take 10% profits and it's not going to affect you capital gains tax-wise, right? So that's a potential benefit. Then avoiding fees. Some mutual funds charge a variety of fees, purchasing, trading, redemption fees, etc. But you should always look for no load, no transaction fee mutual funds. And if you have an advisor that's putting you in loaded or transaction fee mutual funds, you need to leave that advisor ASAP. So those are kind of the positives, okay, for mutual funds. Then ETFs, kind of the opposite in some respects. More trading flexibility. They trade like a stock intraday. Daily disclosures, which is good. Every day you'll know, you can know what the ETF is holding, whereas mutual funds, they only report that once a month. Tax efficiencies. They don't really have those tax capital gains tax because of the how ETFs function. You don't really have that issue. So that I think ETFs are better for traders, but mutual funds are better for long-term dollar cost averaging approach. Because if you're dollar cost averaging and you want to buy something, well, you're going to have to pay commissions if you're buying ETFs, like you would an ordinary stock. Whereas no load, no transaction fee mutual funds will be better for you in the long run. You don't have those constant commissions being paid. All right. Hope that helped everyone out. Now, a real estate agent can cost or save you thousands of dollars. There's a lot at stake. So take a look at this new InvestTalk Insider info sheet. What makes you different? Why should I list my home with you? What are you doing to market my home? These are important questions. And we have a list of 10 of our for our InvestTalk Insiders. It's called 10 questions you need to ask a realtor before you hire them. So sign up for free to become an InvestTalk Insider on InvestTalk.com.
We're glad you're with us on InvestTalk today. And whether you're 20-something or something just past retirement, we're here to help you make better investing and money decisions along the way. But we need to know what you need to know. 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Steve and Justin. This is Matt, Minnesota. I have a question on a couple stocks, and I was looking for your input on these two, please. The first one is AutoZone. I see it goes up considerably all the time, and the company is doing stock buybacks itself. I don't know if it pays a dividend yet, but would you ever be willing to invest in this stock? It looks great. The other stock I am questioning is called Vascular Solutions. It's a smaller medical device company in Minnesota here, but it seems to have been going up consistently over the years. I've seen the stock price over the past years go from $12. Now it's up at $40 in that. Thanks for your help. Thanks for the feedback. Love the show.
I was looking at AutoZone, and most people know what AutoZone is. They own a large chain of automobile replacement parts throughout the country. It's a $24 billion market cap company. It's had some pretty impressive returns. The stock chart is really pretty strong. I just don't like it from a long-term value perspective, to be honest with you. It does about $1 billion in free cash flow, and has about a $24 billion market cap. You know, I like the company. I just don't like it at this valuation. So I would need it right now. It's trading at $800 and $803 a share. I would need this back in the low 600s for me to get excited about the name. So I would hold on off on it now. But it's a very profitable company, good, consistent grower and performer. But I would wait. I'm a value investor, so I'm going to wait on AutoZone. But keep it on your watch list. And then he's looking at Vascular Solutions. VASC is the symbol. Let's see what they do. medical device company is engaged in providing solutions to interventional cardiologists and interventional radiologists. Interesting. Okay. Strong chart, but once again, poor value. I'm giving it a 2 out of 10 on the value perspective. Negative cash flow. No, I don't like it. Don't like it at all. I would stay away from it. This has to be much, much cheaper. I'm talking in the teens, and it's at 41. If it got in the teens, I'd probably pick it up, but not at 41 and not with the trajectory of their business. And you see revenues are growing 13% year over year, but that's starting to decline. And I'm just not a fan of it. So I would stay away from both for the time being. I would keep them up both on my watch list, but I would definitely buy AutoZone before I'd buy Vascular Solutions. Now let's talk about systematic risk. We've seen this recently over the past 7-8 years since the financial crisis. We saw what happened with the banks. We saw the European issue with Greece. And we also saw the Brexit just recently. And all these are shades of systematic risks. Now, traditionally, the response of banking regulators have been to issue rules which seek to ensure the safety and soundness of the banks by mandating minimal capital requirements. Now, the problem is that this ignores systematic risks that can really take down everything, and the capital requirements can become a moot point. Now, there are 6 things that can lead to systematic risks, meaning risks that aren't affecting your company specifically, it's just affecting the whole economy, the whole financial system as a whole. Now, 1 is a banking panic. 2 is a financial crisis due to falling asset prices. 3 is contagion. 4 is financial architecture. And 5 is foreign exchange mismatches in the banking system and behavioral effects from things like the Brexit. So let's talk about banking crises and banking panics. Now, banking panics in the past 2 centuries occur when depositors withdraw their money very quickly. They're scared that they're not going to get it back. It's called a bank run. Now, the solution has been offering deposit insurance, FDIC insurance, and other guarantees. The issue is that today there are more kinds of deposits that fall outside these guarantees. Think of the shadow banking sector. You know, hedge funds. There's a lot of money sitting in hedge funds. There's money sitting in these accounts like Lending Club, right? And these are kind of on the fringe of the financial system, but they don't have deposit guarantees. Okay, so that's kind of where the issues lie today, and where the potential contagion or panic could come from. 2 is asset price declines. We saw that with the tech bubble bursting. Usually this is real estate related, however. You saw that in 2007, 2008, 2009. You saw it back in Japan in the late 80s, early 90s. And usually real estate is the where prices decline. And why is that? Well, real estate is usually financed with leverage. And with leverage comes higher risk. So real estate is the culprit in the majority of financial crises, and is about 2/3 of the time. Now, usually this is precipitated by loose monetary policy, meaning central banks come in, very similar to what they're doing now, making money cheap, and in today's market, free. Now, what can the government do? Well, they could make central banks more accountable. Issue mandates to prevent asset price bubbles. Whereas right now, their mandates are maximum employment and modest inflation. But it ignores a whole wide range of effects that they don't really take into account. And the next one is contagion in uncharted waters. Now, this usually occurs when distress of financial institutions infect the whole system. This is when we're talking about it was too big to fail. And we obviously saw this in 2008, 2009. And central banks use the risk of contagion as justification to intervene. And Congress approved. And this is especially important when these large institutions occupy a key position in a particular market, like the mortgage market with Fannie and Freddie, right? So you see this a lot. And now the banking system's so complicated that how did it get complicated? And that's really because of Basel I and Basel II specifically. To compute the regulatory requirements for a bank, it entails more than 200 million calculations. That's how complex our financial system is today. So that's a little preface on systematic risk, where it comes from. There are more of these, but something you have to understand, it's we're really dealing with a financial system here. It's not just one particular issue. It's complex, and you need to understand those complexities. Now let's pick up a text question. This is from Dennis in Torrance. He says, "Hello, Steve and Justin. I read in Investors Business Weekly that some or even many financial advisors farm out various aspects of their business, including investment management. What do you think of this, and what, if any, functions do you outsource? Thanks, I'm planning to read all the books on your helpful recommended title list, Dennis from Torrance." Great question. Very simply is yes, a lot of CFPs and brokers, they're going to just put you in mutual funds and earn their commission, or maybe privately traded products, private REITs, things like that, which are always illiquid and hard to value, and they're just not great products. They just want to earn their commission. We invest ourselves. We don't farm out any of that. So we will buy mutual funds for clients on smaller accounts because of commissions, etc. But generally, we do all the investments ourselves, and we pick the mutual funds ourselves. We don't collect any commissions. Now you're listening to Invest Talk. Give me a call. I want to hear from you. We have about 10 minutes left in the show. 888-99-CHART.
Hi, my name is Joe, and I'm calling from the city of South San Francisco. My question is, I'm a newbie, and I like to start to form a portfolio and to learn how to invest in stocks. Where do I get a broker? Do I need a broker? Definitely the start-off plan. Thank you.
Well, if you're just starting off, you probably should just simply read about the market, read books. We have a book list on investtalk.com you can look at. You need to follow the market, maybe do some paper trading first. Buy a stock that there are many services out there that are free online that you can find, and just create a portfolio, see how it works, see how prices move, dividends come in, things like that. And learn that way. And then you can start putting money to work and do it slowly, just a few hundred dollars here in mutual funds or ETFs or whatever you have, and just start slowly. Don't rush into it. The biggest thing people do is they rush in. They think they read a few articles and they hear a story from a friend or a cousin or something like that, and they aren't fully prepared, and they don't understand different industries and how asset classes move together. They don't understand economics, okay? You don't understand how a portfolio is built. What's the difference between a small cap and a large cap company? Foreign companies, growth versus value. All of these are very, very important. The financial system as a whole, understanding banks and balance sheets. There's a lot to learn, and if you don't have that full range of knowledge, then you're behind the eight ball, and you're going to make bad decisions just simply out of ignorance. And, you know, it's okay. We've all been ignorant at one point because we all started from knowing nothing. I was lucky enough to have my grandfather who founded KP Financial. He was one to teach me at a very young age. I was in high school when I started learning about all this. Some people get their jump start sooner than others. So don't rush into it. Start slow, be consistent, and just learn the basics and then go from there. Now let's talk a little bit about Brexit and who are the winners to emerge from the Brexit. Well, number one is gold investors. We've seen that gold has been surging. It's been very, very strong pretty much all year. But it definitely got a nice boost after the Brexit vote. And that's really because the expectations for a rate hike from the Fed have dropped dramatically. Bets that rates will be cut by September of this year surged 48.6% after the Brexit vote. Now it's come back a little bit, but you can see that odds of a rate cut are increasing. And that helps gold, clearly. When interest rates drop, that helps gold. And then when interest rates drop, that also helps U.S. homeowners. And the mortgage rate fell to, the average 30-year home loan fell to 3.75% last week, ending June 24th. That's the lowest level since May 2013. So if you're looking to refinance, you probably want to think about doing it now. Number three, British luxury good makers. And really tourist operators in general in Britain. The pound fell to its lowest level in more than 30 years. Well, that makes British goods cheaper than they were before. That makes traveling to Britain cheaper than it was before, if you're from abroad, obviously. Okay. And then British taxpayers. Now, about 10,000 Brussels-based bureaucrats earn more than UK Prime Minister David Cameron, who had a salary of $142,500. And taxpayers were helping pay that. So clearly, the taxpayers in Britain are going to be very, very happy. They're going to save some money. Maybe they're not going to make out as well as some of the other winners in the whole Brexit debate, but they're going to make out. Now our time is up. Now, it doesn't matter where you live, you can still take Steve up on his offer to review your retirement portfolio. July 20th, he'll be hooking up via Skype and telephone to save your place on his schedule for that day. Just go to investtalk.com, click on the Invest Talk tab. I'm Justin Klein, Executive Vice President of KFB Financial. We are a registered investment advisor firm. And for Steve Peasley and everyone at KPP, thank you for listening today. Let's get together again on the next Invest Talk.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.